Hello and welcome to On Mic with Jordan Rich. Always a pleasure to be with you. This podcast is all about the voices we love to listen to on radio and TV and beyond, and the actors and producers, creators, writers, and those in the field of entertainment who make our life special. Today's guest is a friend, and without question, is one who offers us one of the friendliest, calming voices ever. Once heard across the U.S. on WBZ, my alma mater, in the late nights. Dick Summer, our guest, has enjoyed a very successful radio career in many markets, including Boston and New York. In the Big Apple, he worked for legendary WNEW Radio. Dick's style certainly is unique, and his presence on air is still remembered fondly. Listeners loved his creative approach to introducing new music, exhibiting poetry, and finding humor in some of the coolest places. Dick Summer is the author of Staying Happy, Healthy, and Hot, along with a strong-selling series of personal audios such as Love and Touch and Night Connections 1, 2, and 3. Dick is a master storyteller, a narrator, and voiceover artist for countless national commercials. And before you hear the man speak with me, let's hear a little bit of the artist at work.
When you really think about it, nothing is as powerful as nothing, especially when that nothing is sitting in your life, where a dream or a hope, maybe even the beginnings of a love, used to be. Once upon a time, there was a sometimes land where the rain was soft and the sun was gentle, and the summer birds were yellow and blue, and hearts were warm and smiles were tender, and friends were always true. It was Prince Fantasy's land, a magic place, where you could go to close your eyes and watch for your name in lights, and listen for the crowd as it cheers you on, and feel and smell the hot breath of someone beautiful on your naked skin. You could taste soft, wet lips all night long. Long live Prince Fantasy. Blessings on his lovely land. I met you in his castle in the park. I was just passing through, I thought. Your hair was long and soft dark brown then, and you walked with a high-heeled, head-tossing, easy-smiling self-confidence. You had your own apartment, your first new car, and a good start on a promising career, and a doll that you'd had since you were just a little girl. You let me touch the tender, empty place inside you that needed to be filled. You sucked my kisses in and nursed away my needs. And the rain was soft, and the sun was gentle, and the summer birds were yellow and blue, and our hearts were warm, and our smiles were tender, and we promised that would be true. I didn't expect to meet you there. I thought I was just passing through. I really didn't have time for love. I was hard at work selling chunks of my heart, and fragments of my dreams, and the last few ounces of my self-respect to Lady Success. It was just one lovely summer and one amazing early autumn long ago. It shouldn't matter anymore. Your long dark brown hair would have silver streaks now. Do you still need your doll? Has your apartment become a house on the hill full of love and warmth and truth? Or did you and I make the same mistake? Did you lose half your heart because you were afraid to give it all away? Do you still have an empty place inside that needs to be filled? It took me all this time to find out that I do. It's a place full of loneliness and joy and magic and fear. And I can feel them all every time I wonder if you still go for walks in Prince Fantasy's Magic Park, with your high heels and your easy smile, your little girl doll, tossing your soft, silver-streaked hair. Or has it been too late, too long since we were Fantasy's children, closing our eyes and watching our names in lights, listening for the cheers, feeling hot breath on our lovely, naked skin, and tasting soft, wet lips all night long? Would you care that I finally learned that the fantasy was real? When the rain was soft, and the sun was gentle, and the summer birds were bright yellow and blue, and our hearts were warm, and our smiles were tender. And now I know the magic was always you.
What a pleasure it is to reconnect on, I guess you would call them airwaves, right, Dick?
Call them anything you like.
Okay, I'll call them airwaves, even though they're digital waves. Dick Summer, joy to welcome you back and to chat with you and catch up. And you're also a podcast guy these days. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I do a podcast at dicksummer.com/podcast because, frankly, to tell you the truth, this is the real truth. I have a thing about sitting behind a microphone and talking to people. I just loved being on the radio. I mean, you're probably too young to remember The Shadow. Do you remember The Shadow?
Well, I certainly know Lamont Cranston. Sure, I know about The Shadow. Sure.
Right. It was, he was the young man about town who discovered the secret of clouding men's minds so they could not see you. And everybody's like The Shadow on radio. See, you can appear without anybody seeing you.
That's true.
And I don't know if you've done a lot of remotes, broadcasts out of the studio. And how often has someone come up to you and said, "You don't look like you sound"?
All the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
I love it. I look, because in the back of my head, what they're saying is, "My God, you and some big, handsome guy, where is he?" And I always kind of smile. I take it as a compliment,
In terms of your work on the air, it's kind of a nice extension to continue doing the kinds of things on a slightly different formatic basis. Those who remember you on air at BZ or in New York remember how much of a great storyteller and a great imagination creator you are. And I guess you can do the same thing on the podcast.
I think you can, absolutely. And I've noticed one of the other things that I've noticed about your podcasts is they come in at all different times. And I think, freeing yourself from the tyranny of time is one of the great things about doing a podcast. One of yours came in at 21 minutes, another at 26 minutes.
Right, right.
Instead of 5, 10, 15, a half hour. That's when the first thing I started doing a podcast, first thing I thought of was, how long is this supposed to be? And then I realized the nice thing about doing a podcast is what you do is you get on, you tell your story, and you go away. That's it.
You have limited and limitless space, in a sense.
Yeah.
I mean, it's whatever you want to make it.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Tell me a little bit about life for you these days. And again, Dick Summer, in the introduction, you heard me talk about his various pursuits in radio and his success as a voiceover artist. But you've become a writer in your later years, and a pretty good one, and have had a lot of fun with the written word. But talk a little bit about what life's been like these last couple of years as you enjoy it as much as you, I assume, do.
Well, I have to admit that there are still times when I kind of itch to get back on the air, especially not frequently, not on weekends, got to be on the air at midnight on Sunday night. No, I don't want to do that. But, just every once in a while you want to get on there and talk to people, around Christmas time or, the first day of spring, something like that. And you want to share that feeling, the first day you go outside and it's warm enough you can slip off your scarf. I just love that. And in the wintertime, you look out your window and everything, it's clear. Just a whole bunch of stars around. And those are just things that, you've heard about theater of the mind. They talk about that all the time. But I think radio is part of audio. I think audio has the power of providing theater of the heart. And I think that's more human than theater of the mind. And that's something you do very well. And I give it a shot, too. One of the things that I like about what your work has done is you don't just get on the air and do your show. You get on the air, you do your show, and you promote a calendar. And the proceeds go to some good cause in your area. Now that's using the power of the heart, the theater of the heart, and I congratulate you for it.
Thank you.
We tried to do that in the 60s on when BZ was a music station, and sometimes we got it right. I mean, when JFK was assassinated, I don't know how old you are, but that was the year I got started at WBZ, 1963. And I remember sitting there in the studio and thinking, oh, my God, what am I going to do? Now, fortunately, then as now, BZ has an incredible news team, and they did at that time, too. That was when Gary LaPierre was first getting started. We called him Gary Loppy Years.
I never heard that one. Wow.
Yeah, well, we did it behind his back.
Okay.
But the guy who taught me an awful lot about how radio should be used was Carl DeSouze, who was the morning man immediately after Marconi on WBZ.
Yes.
And Carl was a personal friend of the Kennedys. He hung out with them down at Hyannisport a lot, and he knew these people firsthand. So after JFK's assassination, you know, the news team did the programming almost all the time, but when he came back, we had to start again with the regular programming. But what Carl did was Carl commandeered a news wagon, you know, and he took it down to the Common. I break up every time I think about this, because he just sat there and he talked about people and Boston and tradition and history and what he knew about JFK and the family, and it was wonderful. He must have spent 5 hours just doing talk, just talking. No production, no jingles, just talking. And that's what you call theater of the heart.
I love it. And your speech that was so eloquent when you accepted a few years ago place in the Massachusetts Broadcast Hall of Fame, you referred to that theater of the heart and that connection. And I guess what I'd like to have you talk further about is what you've learned about human beings and their need to hear another voice, even a strange voice, somebody they don't know personally, but someone they can get to know through the magic of audio. And it's worked for you over the years. Just a little more on that, if you wouldn't mind.
Well, yeah, I really believe in that. We're in a society where almost half of the households in Manhattan are single-person households. That could be due to a great number of things, but one of the things it's due to is the fact that we are becoming more and more isolated from each other, basically because we have the ability to be better and better connected with each other, but we're not doing that. We're not connecting at each other. What people are doing is screaming at each other, and that can be pretty well verified by when you think of MSNBC versus,
Fox.
CNN and Fox. Right. Yeah, they're not communicating at all. They're just screaming at each other. The controversy about kneeling when the national anthem is played. Well, the people are doing that because they're protesting what they feel is undue excess on the part of police. Well, I have a brother who's a cop, so I have other, you know, ideas about that. But there is a valid point to be made there, but the administration is calling it a matter of disrespect for the country, and there's a matter of, there's a point to be made there. But we'll never make any points if we just gather into crowds and throw stones at each other. You got to make some kind of connection. And I think you can uniquely do that with audio. Mm. You know, I've done some TV, as I think you have too, And it's fine, you know, but as far as a connection is concerned, the tube gets in the way. With audio, you know, either radio or streaming or CDs or whatever, a lot of times you put an earplug right in your ear. There is nothing between you and the person who is speaking. wow, can't get much more intimate than that.
No, it's true. And particularly when you look back at your career as a late night guy, and I did a lot of late nights as well, and that something about the twilight of the day, the hour, the lack of traffic, perhaps the lack of smog, and the closer relationship you can develop with someone when there's less in the way, less interruption.
Yeah, sure. You and I both did a lot of overnights, and that can be good and bad. You know, it's good in the fact... It's bad in the fact that not too many people are listening, but it's good in the fact that people are really listening while they're listening. And I like that a lot. And you know, the atmosphere. I don't know, when I was at BZ, if you walked out of the main studio and took a quick turn to the left, you get down the hall, and there was a door with a window in it that you could see out onto Storrow Drive.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to go down there every once in a while to get a long song on or whatever. And I'd go down and look at Storrow Drive at 3 o'clock in the morning while it's snowing. And there were always a couple of cars going past. And I couldn't help wonder, what's going on there, you know? It's like I used to have a little airplane, and I used to go flying at night. And I'd look down, and you see the lights, and you wonder, you know, what's going on? And you realize at night, very intimate things happen. You know, you got touch me looks flashing across rooms and all kinds of things are going on. People are earning or losing each other's trust, and it's all going on down there. And that's some of the magic about very, very late night stuff.
I always found when I did the show late night that it felt very comfortable, as though I were in someone's heart or ears, and I didn't feel as a broadcast. I felt more as a conversation it was coming off. And as a result, people, the greatest compliment they can pay somebody like us is, hey, you sound just like you do. You're the same guy. I said, yeah, same guy.
Yeah, that is interesting. But, you know, that I did a series of CDs also. There are six of them. I think I may have sent you some. If I didn't, I'll send you some.
Okay.
Because the idea being that this is getting to be a very lonely time. People are unconnected with each other. And the sound of a human voice, you know, can't make up for the fact that there's nobody there. But on the other hand, if the sound of the human voice is human, then... You know, if there's some guy who's just gotten fired or something and he's listening to me, and I give him a little punch in the shoulder, clean up a dirty joke and tell him and make him laugh a little, or, you know, some woman who's been left or whatever and she's getting ready to cry, you get a chance to put your arm around her and make her feel a little bit better. And you can do that with a voice. And that's the purpose of the CDs.
It's particularly helpful when one has a voice that Dick Summer has. And I have to ask you about the training or the mentorship that you had and when this voice developed, the actual voice itself, because it's so melodious, it's so recognizable. You've done national campaigns for advertisers. But tell me about the early Dick Summer iteration.
That's an interesting question. The earliest voice I remember was one night my dad had taken us out for a drive someplace. It was very late at night, and I was very tired. I was kind of sitting in the back seat of the car sleeping. And I'm talking like I'm 1 year old, something like that, you know. And dad picked me up, and he carried me into the house, and he was singing. And my dad had a beautiful, deep, strong, gentle baritone voice. And what I remember the most was the feeling that came up from his chest. So that's my earliest introduction to voice. Dad was a musician, and he taught singing and things mm-hmm. like that, and I did some stuff like that. But the interesting thing about it is his voice got passed down to me and to my brothers and to my sons. And as a matter of fact, it's to the point where my sons live in all different places now. When one of them calls and says, "Hi, Dad," I got to stop and think carefully, which one is this? Because they all sound alike. They all have slightly different accents, you know,
right,
because, as
right.
I said, they live in different places. But I think honesty shows in a voice, or dishonesty. As a matter of fact, there was a study that was done. I'm trying to remember the woman's name. It was a female professor did a study at a university. It was a genuine study. And the conclusion of the study was that simply by listening to a person's voice, you could get a very good idea, obviously, of the person's sex, but also of what kind of a person it was. And she did an experiment where she had people just count from 1 to 10. That was all. That was the only voice that was given. But she spoke to the people before they recorded that counting from 1 to 10, and she picked 5 people who confessed that they had cheated on their mates, and 5 people who said no, they didn't. And the people who took part in the test nailed, I think it was 75% or 80% of the people who had cheated.
I'm not surprised to hear that. I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, go out on a blind date is okay, but don't go out on a deaf date, you know?
Well, it's akin to fingerprints. Obviously, everyone's voice is unique on the planet ever, which I think is amazing. But also the fact that people can sense empathy. They can sense warmth. They can sense concern and fear. And when you're a radio host and an audio master, as you are, you know that's a kind of an awesome responsibility to be honest to the audience, because they will figure it out very quickly if you're not.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think is very interesting about the radio business right now, I did some syndication stuff for the guy who took over CBS Radio recently, and he seemed like a very nice guy and a very empathetic kind of a guy who would understand that kind of thing. The first thing he did with CBS Radio, fortunately not with BZ, but with CBS Radio in general, was he developed, I think he called it a jack format. And the idea was that they played only music, and the only talking they did was stuff that they absolutely had to do. In other words, they purposely took all of the personality out of radio. And I'm thinking, huh? Because that's the only thing that radio has to offer that no other audio source can offer. Mm. It's the connection between the guy on the air and the person who's listening. And you take that out of there, and you may as well have a jukebox.
Well, it's true. And you had the opportunity when you worked the late night shows in Boston and then went to other markets to be that guy that you are. I mean, that's a rare opportunity in the business then and today, isn't it, Dick?
I was fortunate enough to work at stations like WBZ and WNEW in New York and WNBC also, where the program directors, it's kind of hard to put a finger on this. The program directors were as macho. Radio was and still is to a great extent a kind of a macho thing. It's almost all run by guys. And as you very well know from what must have been your personal experience too, guys get very antsy about any kind of emotion on the air that isn't anger or humor. You know, it's arm's length stuff. So I remember one night, my mom's favorite poem was The Highwayman.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought I'd record it for her one night. And so I did. And I had some music on the air that fit. So I put The Highwayman on the air on BZ between a couple of songs that seemed to make sense. And I did that with a little bit of trepidation because it's like a 5 or 6 minute bit. And you know, because you have also dealt with music radio, that is not the kind of thing you do.
No.
But I put it on the air, and I was thinking, I'm going to catch hell for this in the morning, and I know how I'll deal with that. I think I'll just sleep late, you know?
Excellent plan.
But I put it on the air, and the program director sent me a memo about it. program director was a guy by the name of Al Hickok, and he was a genius. Al Hickok, you know, the program director is the guy who is in charge of determining the programming on a station. Al Hickok hired seven guys and then got out of our way. Every month he'd have a program meeting, and we'd go to the meeting, and the last thing he always said was, we hire you guys to entertain. I don't want to hear two songs back to back unless they're there for a reason. Can you imagine that in today's radio programming?
Oh,
my God. So Al sent me a memo, and I think I still have a copy of it around someplace. This was a long time ago. This was in the 60s, 1960s, for those of you who are very young. And what he said was, I never heard anything like that. Do it again. And that opened up a whole new world for me. And as a matter of fact, I did a show on Sunday night called Dick Summers Subway. It was what was called underground music at that point. You call it classic rock now. And I found it very difficult to think of going from some, you know, beautiful Joan Baez song into something by the Doors. So in order to do transitions, I started writing some stuff. What I didn't know was a very beautiful woman listened every Sunday night, and she copied those things down in shorthand. She was the lady in charge of the commercials at the radio station. This is a long way around, but it's kind of important. You know, you're talking about being on all night. We had a basketball game, a charity basketball game once, the WBZ disc jockeys against the Boston Patriots. Now, Jordan, you're an ordinary size guy, so am I.
Yeah.
But it was a wheelchair basketball game, and I will never forget, we're out there in the wheelchairs. They opened the other doors, and there are these 400-pound, 8-foot-tall guys in wheelchairs, and they were sponsored by the Hood Ice Cream Company. So I'm looking at Man Mountains with the word Hood across their chests. And I'm thinking, this is not going to be a good game. Because I'm lousy at basketball. I mean, I'm a pretty good baseball player, but basketball is not my game. So, you know, the secretaries all went to cheer for the guys because that's what secretaries did in those days. And because I was on all night, you know, who pays attention to the all-night guy? But every time I did anything that wasn't completely catastrophic, I heard this one voice cheering. And I looked over, and there is this gorgeous, long brown hair, very curvy secretary, and she's cheering for me. So I said, wow. And they had chartered a bus to take us to the game. And, you know, I get on the bus after the game, and there was an empty seat sitting next to me. And I thought, oh, geez, maybe she'll sit down next to me. So she did. And she's still sitting down next to me. She is, I call her my lady wonder wench. Yeah. I don't know where we start this.
Doesn't matter, because I was just thinking about how beautiful you are as a storyteller. I can picture the gym and the guys you're playing against. I know your lovely bride. I've talked to her on the phone anyway. And I met her in Boston when you guys were up here. And absolutely, I got you 100%. I have to, though, take a little detour because you mentioned it. You dropped it. And I have to pick up on it because on my wall in my office, I've got posters that I bought in 1983 that say WNEW on them. I always say that working at BZ in Boston is akin to having a stint in left field at Fenway. It has to be like playing first base at Yankee Stadium to get a chance to work at NEW during the time back in the day. Can you talk a little bit about that with us?
I would be glad to. When I was maybe 5 or 6, my parents gave me a portable radio for Christmas. I turned it on, and it happened to be set on WNEW. I think I didn't turn it off until Easter. And the guy on the air at the time was William B. Williams. And in about 15 seconds, William B. Williams taught me more about radio than I could possibly learn. This was a little later on. I was probably 10 or 11, 12, something like that. But he was interviewing Vic Damone. And Vic Damone and Willie B were both very heavily into the Big Brothers organization. And it was a nice interview. At the end of it, William B. Williams took about 10 seconds of dead air. Now, you're a professional radio guy, all right? This is one of the biggest stations in New York. 10 seconds of dead air, Judd Jordan. And then Willie B. just very simply said, Vic, I really like you. Put me on the floor. And I didn't know why it put me on the floor, but it comes back to what you were saying before about honesty. Willie B. was a big enough man to know that he could kind of drop his drawers and it would be okay. And my dad was the smartest guy who ever lived. And what he taught was two things. The most important thing in your life is to take care of your woman, was number one. And number two was big boys don't cry, but big men sometimes do.
Oh, I love that. Love that. And you mentioned William B. Williams, just one of many legendary announcers that paraded through New York for decades. And what I love doing with this podcast is connecting with people from all generations. And I think giving the due honor to people like yourself, but also to the names like William B. Williams, because we only learn and understand and appreciate what's in the present by appreciating what's in the past. And I just think it's cool as get out to do that. And I think working at WNEW, I have these posters, man. You got to see them. One's Sinatra, one is Mel Torme, who signed it for me. Ella, and I think Louis Armstrong. You know, posters while they're hot before they close the station format. I think they stopped that big band format in the early 80s. Am I right about that, Dick?
I think you're probably right. But interestingly, it wasn't really a format. NEWAM was built basically the same way as BZ was built. Which is one of the reasons why, you know, I think I kind of fit there. There wasn't a format. You played what you felt you wanted to play. And as a result, for example, at BZ, we played a lot of stuff from our own personal collections or in some instances tapes that people brought into the station. One time, a guy came into the station. He had an old torn pea coat on, you know, one of those blue coats. It was torn, kind of tattered blue jeans on. And he said he had a tape. They'd like me to hear it. I said, well, okay. You know, so I took the tape in and I put it on and on a reel in the control room. And it took me about 6 minutes to get my eyes closed after I heard it. Guy was Tom Rush.
Oh, yeah, I know Tom. What a wonderful guy.
And the song was Joni Mitchell's The Urge for Going. Anybody who's not familiar with that song should look it up. Joni Mitchell was, I think, 19 at the time. And the lyric on that, oh, my God. It make you believe in God.
No, it's true. And Tom, it continues to be a favorite in New England and beyond. But you have an opportunity to do what we do and do the things that are special to us that we'd like to share. I think the whole story revolves for me around sharing. I couldn't wait to get on the air for all those years and share what happened to me today or my love for a particular film or the meal I had and why it worked. I mean, I just love that. And people responded as they did to you and they still do to you.
Yeah, and it's wonderful. You are one of the guys who doesn't mind dropping his drawers on the air. And I know that sounds a little bit weird, but I think it fits, you know?
Yeah.
And you get Ron Radio on the air, and he's going to play 15 in a row for you. And I, oh, Jesus. There's no connection there at all.
Well, I know that therapists, we don't want to put them out of business, but for you and me, you have a lot of insight into your own soul when you're bearing it, in a sense, because you feel comfortable enough and you feel secure enough with an audience. And it's an honor. It's a true honor to do what we've done and what we continue to do. I mean, that's the thing. Knowing that people are going to be affected by it, and I believe in a positive way, ultimately, is a real heady experience, and for me, a great honor.
Yeah, the only reason I left BZ was because I was on the air one day, and I used to do the summer relief shifts when, you know, Dave and the guys on the daytime had their vacations. I would fill in for them, and I was on the air one day. I think I was doing Dave Maynard's show, and I was explaining to people on the air how his headphones said David H. Maynard. Now, what was the H? So people called in and made suggestions. We determined that Dave should be David Heartfelt Maynard, and that's what we gave him. But the phone rang, and I picked it up, and the operator said, there's somebody on the phone who wants to talk to you. Okay. And it was the program director at WNEW. And he said, we'd like to have you come down. You know, left field for the Boston Red Sox, first base for the Yankees. Well, for me, it was first base at the Dodgers because I'm...
Oh, Brooklyn.
I remember the day, first day my dad took me for a ball game at Ebbets Field. And, you know, I've been to many ballparks. This is the first time. I'm six, I'm seven, something. And we went up the escalators and up a long corridor. And up at the top of the corridor was the sun. And it you could hear it, I swear. Come up on this long corridor, and everything was all of a sudden bright sunlight. And I looked down on the field, and there's this green grass and the guys in their uniforms. And there's Jackie Robinson. Oh, my God. Mm. And to this day, when I think about it, my voice goes up.
Mm. You become that kid again, that six-year-old kid.
You and I had a chance to be a kid. What is being on the radio? Being on the radio means you're hanging out with a bunch of friends and you're telling some jokes or telling some stories, and you get paid for it.
I know. You actually get someone provides you with income and and even benefits if you're lucky. But it's truly a gift to be able to do what we do. And I think, as we started our conversation today, both of us are podcasters. I think that this technology, which can be so harrowing and cause so many problems for so many people, has also enabled people like you, Dick, to have that connection and that voice continuing in the ether forever. And I think that's a fabulous thing. And I'm so happy for you and Barb and everybody in your family that you're still out there doing what you do so meticulously and so mellifluously.
Jordan, I can feel a wrap-up coming, and I understand that. You emceed the Massachusetts Broadcasters Hall of Fame, and you referred to some things that I was talking about there. There was one thing I wanted to get to, and there wasn't time, so I'm going to leave it with you, if it's okay.
You've got all the time in the world. Go right ahead.
Say somebody sent me this poem, and I forget who sent it, but it's wonderful. It says, it's winter in Massachusetts, and the gentle breezes blow at 70 miles an hour and 35 below. Oh, how I love Massachusetts. When the snow's up to your butt, you take a breath of winter and your nose gets frozen shut. Yes, the weather here is wonderful, so I guess I'll hang around. I could never leave Massachusetts because I'm frozen to the ground.
You know, you killed at that event, and that would have been more gravy and more and more fun. But, you know, we unfortunately, at these events, we could spend all day, and people had to get back to work at some point. But it was a great time seeing you there. And I don't think anyone in the room didn't have a warm feeling about Dick Summer, whether they had heard you originally or heard you that day. So well done, my friend.
Thank you. And thank you for talking to me here. And let's stay connected.
Oh, we definitely shall. And people can stay connected through dicksummer.com. And he's up doing his thing at all hours, but he's a fine American with a voice that could melt your heart anytime. Dick, it's a pleasure, and all the best to the family.
You too. Take care. Bye.
You've been listening to On Mic with Jordan Rich, a podcast produced by Chart Productions, on the web at chartproductions.com. And please subscribe, download, rate, and review us on iTunes and most other podcast platforms. Thanks so much for listening. Take care.